This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, good morning. It's Sunday. It's a little after 11. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Every Sunday now, used to be Saturdays, but I'm becoming a big boy now. I'm shooting over to Sundays where a lot more people are awake and cognizant of being the preparedness and disaster world. That's what we do on this show. Try to help you out with the disasters and emergencies that happen, whether it's nowadays, right now. Well, let's talk about this. Heck, let's just jump right into it. Let's talk about this past month. I got ice damming on people's roofs, and I got the collapsed roofs. I got even impact on some cars. Car sits on the property. It's an insurance claim. Some trees are getting heavy with snow and ice and falling through windshields and banging up cars. And I don't do that end of it, but it is a property related. So I come out, even though the adjuster from the other side's taking a peek at the vehicle. So it's been a nutty winter. It's I think we're sitting at 62 or 63 inches of snow so far. I think the record on hand is 79, and that happened in 1995. I do remember that like it was yesterday, because I actually had back surgery not too long before that, and I was out there and I was shoveling with a brace on my neck. My wife was real happy about that, and she didn't marry me for my brains, I'll tell you that. So like I said, we're in the throngs of the winter, and ice damming is very very relevant out there in the news, and the collapsing of the roofs, like I just said. So take a peek at those things. You know, you can really help out yourselves by and when it's a safety issue, make sure your ladders are sturdy. So don't be leaning over leaning on the top step of your ladder trying to take off ice and snow on the garage roof or over your awning that's right over your front of your front door. I've seen a couple people do that on my block. Not too smart. And then, this past week there was anywhere from 20 to 25,000 people without power, both sides of the river, Jersey and New York. So we're going to be talking a little bit, revisiting, because a couple weeks ago we talked about generators with the prep room, but not to this extent. We got Captain Dan, also Dan O'Brien from Academy Electric, and I think it might be next week or it might be the week after. I'm not too sure. We're going to talk about the upcoming shows in a second, but we're talking about generators and community preparedness, and we got some startling some information percentage wise. You know, some of these protocols and set by the town or municipality directors, they're employing buildings with no power. So we're going to take a look at that and discuss that at length. We're not going to sell anybody out, don't worry, no one needs to run and hide. So with that, and also don't forget your cars. I mean, having a little something in that car, shovel, some sand, blanket, maybe some energy bars or something like that. But so moving into February, and then March comes right after that, if I remember correctly from school, March, April, May. Those are the way the months go. We have a bunch of new guests, a lot of stuff with preparedness. And like I said, we just said we're going to have Dan O'Brien on here regarding the generators and preparedness for the OEMs and things like that. He's got some knowledge on that. We're going to have a representative also from the Port Authority. We want to talk about some of the preparedness that they do, because I know a lot of people are traveling over the bridges and the tunnels and always wondering about what these guys are all about, what they do. So we'll give you some background on that. We also have a representative from the Red Cross. That's going to be really interesting, because you know what? A lot of people have no idea what the Red Cross does. They don't. They show up, they give out coffee and donuts. They do just a little bit more than that. And you're going to find out what they do. So I'll have the representative from the north section of the Red Cross, the things that are up in our neck of the woods. No reason to bring some guy from South Jersey up here. It's not applicable. Also, in the disaster preparedness and emergency service world, again, just like my upcoming guest with Felix Nader from Nader Associates, I didn't realize I ran into a person in this particular field from my particular field, and that's a guy from the corrections facilities, and his name is Daniel Del Val. He puts out a magazine called NJ Corrections, and he's going to be a guest, and we're going to be talking about fallen heroes, the fire department personnel and law enforcement and how that ties into the disasters and the emergencies or response and responding. So that's going to be a real interesting enlightening and definitely tugging at the heart show. We're also going to have Mickey Franklin. He's from Telworks, and he's going to be talking about data protection and preparedness on that, because the way this world is going, everything is so fast. You're buying online, Googling, and going to whatever the websites you go to purchase things. You know, you're putting out your personal information. So Mick's got some ideas on that. Don't forget, we have the one to, you know, Bart Terulli, you know, financial preparedness. I like three weeks ago, that show was good, because, you know, we talked about people are going to die. That's definitely going to happen to you. And are you prepared for it? But Bart's got some other ideas to make it a little less traumatic, if you will. Death is always traumatic. I'm not saying it's not. But financially, if it's not, there's no burden there that's making the situation a little less trying, if you will. And, one of our other repeat guys is Paul Faust. He's always I like to banter back and forth about being prepared in this world and about the little things that you can do, very simple things. He's got a lot of common sense preparedness tools and ideas, which he's a good guy. I like him. And when he comes in the room, all of a sudden I just get jacked up. I feel like he's a brother, and we go back and forth. If I didn't know him, we'd probably go to blows before anything. Then we start talking about preparedness. But anyway, this is a Disaster Recovery Hour. It is now Sundays at between 11 and 12 on the Apple. Bill, what are we calling it? The Disaster Preparedness Show of New York. And we are the only game out there, and I think we're doing it pretty well. Check out the new website, because instead of going to the old cppems.com, that website, now you can go to www.drhradio, which stands for Disaster Recovery Hour. So drhradio.net, and I said .net, not .com. Don't be a knucklehead, make it a net, not a com. And so with that said, I think we're going to be moving into the second segment. With that, like I said, our guest today is going to be Felix Nader from Nader Associates. And this is an interesting guy. Has a lot to do with disasters and emergencies, something that's very much in the forefront of the media lately. And that's the Gifford shooting out in Arizona. He's got some thoughts on that, as well as other workplace incidences. So we'll go to a station break. Look at this. I got a little text going on right here from my wife saying, don't forget the salt. I went through 3 50-pound bags already. That's a lot of salt being thrown down on the ice. That's how bad it's been. I think last year I used like a bag and a half. But like I said, let's go to a station break. Listen, you can't have enough salt. You can't have your wives, and especially, you know what? You can't have your mailman or your mail person slipping on your front stoop, because, you know, they give you that letter out there about making sure everything is copacetic, so they can give you your mail so you can pay your bills and pay your tax bills and all the rest of the people you got to pay. But anyway, so let's go to a station break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, we're back. Disaster Recovery Hour is every Sunday. Now that we move from Saturday, it's every Sunday at 11 a.m. Through 12. And it's a good slot. My guest today is Felix Nader. Felix Nader is the founder of Nader Associates. They're a workplace security management consultant firm which specializes in workplace violence and incident prevention. I know that's a very relevant topic nowadays, considering it's coming on, 2.5 weeks ago, almost, 3 weeks ago now. It's with the Giffords out there, Mrs. Gifford, I should say, out in Arizona. And we're gonna visit that topic somewhere later on in the show. But Felix, thanks a lot for coming in.
Pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So, Felix, in this world of security and violence and incident prevention, why don't you give the listeners a little background, and we'll start rocking and rolling from there.
Well, thank you, Chris. As you know, I'm a retired postal inspector. Spent 26 years as the United States Postal Inspector investigating a plethora of postal-related crime, ranging from simple thefts of mail to the more hostile crime, including armed robberies, assaults, and even murders of postal employees on their official duties. towards the twilight of my career, after moving back from Washington to the New York City area, I was asked to take a look at workplace violence prevention as a preferred assignment, since at the time the chief inspector and the postmaster general were looking at putting together a postal inspector national team to look at workplace violence. I didn't want to do it because at the time I had spent all my career in criminal investigations and I didn't know what workplace violence prevention was all about. But looking back, Chris, it was the most exciting 8.5 years of my life. I put to work some skill sets that I didn't know I had in dealing with senior management at the post office, as well as senior management within the unions that were a tremendous ally and a tremendous assister in helping their constituents avoid the pitfalls of engaging in misconduct.
Now, that's how I guess. Oh, sorry. Continue.
That's how I got started.
You know, it's an old phrase now. But, you know, going postal, that came on really the heels of you starting to get into the security business, correct?
Well, yes. When I retired...
And it's a crude term. I hate to say it, but it's, you know, people don't understand, you know, they don't assimilate anything with that except like, hey, you know, because people throw that flippant phrase around everywhere.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact origin of it other than to say that I think it was a misquote when someone said going postal. In the mid-80s, from my recollection, late 70s, mid-80s, I had been part of a team in New York as well as some other inspectors around the nation that were investigating a high, inordinate number of letter carrier robberies, vehicle break-ins, and post office robberies and hijackings that really, really put the letter carrier and the clerk and other postal employees at risk from those kinds of violent crimes by non-postal employees. Coincidentally, on the heels of all that and associated around the same time period, we had the Norman, Oklahoma incident with Mr. Sherrill, who unfortunately, I believe, killed and wounded a combination of 17 employees that really propelled what workplace violence in the post office was to the forefront and the limelight. And then from then, there were several other incidents that really remained on the forefront that eventually going postal was the euphemism that referred to postal employees and violent crime.
Yeah, yeah, that's an unfortunate phrase on the heels of can you still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, we'll have that. Well, Bill will cut that out. I'm sorry. So now this has been going on. You've been involved in this for, what, 17 years now?
17 years between my consulting practice and my time as a postal inspector, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you just joined us, this is a Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. My guest today is Felix Nader. Felix is the founder of Nader Associates. Like I said, they're a security management consultant firm specializing in violence and incident preventions. So, Felix, the listeners get an understanding of I think what you just described is, you know, in my world, let me all back up. In my world, I deal with property disasters, and now my eyes have been opened up with the internationally with earthquakes and tsunamis and things of that nature. And I've been able to grab some intel from numerous government guys who handle those types of situations. Now, I was when I saw the Gifford situation, Bill and I, the producer of the show, we were talking about, you know, that's workplace, it's property, it's there's a, you know, I like I've been telling my listeners for the last 6 months, it's that you know, disasters come in many forms nowadays, and workplace is a huge one. I have a very good friend who sets workplace protocols for the health end of it. So, but we wanted to discuss, you know, people going to work every day. You know, it's just like with the towers when the planes got slammed into those buildings. You know, mom and dad went to work that day and they didn't come back home. But it doesn't necessarily need to be a plane. It could be right. your coworker. So, let's give. When you implement or you discuss your plan or your methodology, if you will, to business owners, they're large and small. It doesn't need to be a Fortune 500 company. It could be 50 employees, 20 employees, or 400 employees. Correct.
Correct. And generally, that advisory service runs the gamut. But it's particularly coincidental that disaster recovery and workplace violence prevention seems not to have any correlative relevance, whereas from my point of view, it does. Whenever a person comes in and commits a very serious crime in a workplace, the typical business operation comes to an interruption. And you've got to be, if you're a small business or mid-sized business, you've got to be thinking, what would I do to keep my supply chains and my customer services happy when there's an interruption caused by a fatality that has been interrupted by police activity? I might be in a strip mall. It may not be my business, but traffic is prohibited from entering. Oh, my goodness, how do I keep my operation going? It's all part of your disaster recovery that should be a considered factor in your business planning.
Yeah, well, now what we in the insurance industry, they call that business interruption, BI. You're exactly right. Yeah, exactly correct. I mean, you're talking about you're in a strip mall, the you know, the 7-Eleven or the name, whatever, just a convenience store alone. There's a robbery, shut down the plaza. The guy in the pizzeria, you know what? He's probably losing thousands of dollars a day.
That's correct.
So
and you saw what
yeah.
happened following September 11, Chris. Unfortunately, all those businesses that were around the World Trade Center when those buildings collapsed, particularly small to mid-sized businesses, probably never came back because they hadn't considered disaster recovery, business continuity, and anything that would impact in an adverse way their typical business operations.
Yeah, I did work down at the towers after they went down. Worked for an emergency service company in the city. Good experience with that business, that company. I learned a lot of things from downtown. And one of the things that, however, not learning but observing is many businesses did not come back. You know, you
right,
could
exactly.
that the there's no sustainability with that, and if you're not properly insured, or if you're a larger company like Amex, they shot over to Jersey City, and then they put brokers uptown, and whether they had contingency plans in play already or not, I'm sure they did. I mean, they're big companies, but also you can't discredit them if they didn't, because who would have thunked it, right?
Now, who'd have thunked it? But seriously, when you talk about adverse situations, police situations, workplace violence, they involve people. And people should always be at the forefront of what you do in your overall business planning, specifically workplace violence. I keep hearing from small businesses when I talked in the tri-state area of Pennsylvania, I talked to a group of business owners there, and one of them behind my back, after I said, you have to invest in doing some kind of background screening, says to me, but not intentionally, with this connotation that, Felix, I can't afford to do background investigations. I need people to come and do the jobs that I hire them to do right now. So when you don't want to consider risk, how can you possibly say you're deploying a defense that will protect you from the threat of someone that comes in and steals from you, someone that comes in and sets your company up for robbery, or someone that just has the indicators of a potential employee at risk, but you'll never know because you didn't take the time to ask those pertinent questions.
Right. It's funny because even nowadays in the athletic field of the recreation, you know,
sure.
which is dynamite. You know, you got to see if there's people out there, you know, who've had problems, and not, I shouldn't say problems there, but dealing with children. And, you know, I have two young kids. I want some kid, some guy from another state hiding in Jersey because he's had, you know, some issues with regarding dealing with other fellow human beings, if you will. You know, there's
sure.
your occasional issues where, you know, they made a mistake and whatever. I'm not talking about that, but the serious, you know, felonies, if you will.
Exactly.
So we're going to go to a break in a couple seconds. And when we get back, I want to talk about the different types of clients that your services are warranted, and you know, give me a quick rundown how you would approach a particular one type of business opposed to another type of business. We'll be right back. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, and we'll just go to station break. Be right back. Thanks.
You bet.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple.
Money is all dried up, and the work is all gone. Don't want to go to the mailbox, don't want to answer the phone. Did I mention my baby?
Michael Guidreau is the cure for your bankruptcy blues. With nearly 100% bankruptcy success rate, Michael Guidreau is an expert in bankruptcy, credit card settlement, and loan modification. Call 201-837-7777 today for a consultation. 201-837-7777 and get rid of your bankruptcy blues. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Hey, we're back. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. My guest today is Felix Nader. He's the founder of Nader Associates. As we speak in the last segment, their association, their business line of work is a workplace security management consulting firm, and their focus is on violence and incident prevention in the workplace. And they also have expertise in other areas. But today we're focusing on workplace and things that you could do to set things in motion, or Felix can describe a situation and how you can move forward and do the proper preparedness, because that's what the show's about, is about being preparedness. Whether it's now we're taking on another face here with workplace violence. Felix, what are the businesses that you target? And also, with the second part of that question, what are some of the businesses that you've worked with?
Sure. Well, I would not want to divulge the name,
okay,
to protect the innocent, so to speak. But generally speaking, I stayed within my comfort zone. Coming out of the Postal Service, it was a plant manufacturing, production, processing environment. So I target those kinds of niche markets currently in my consulting practice. The most that make me feel comfortable, and the most that make me feel as though I have a value-added comparable dimension to offer to them based upon my past experiences. So manufacturing plants, processing and production plants. But I will be honest with you, even though I promote to those markets, I oftentimes am called upon by larger organizations either as a keynote speaker or as an assessor, an evaluator, or a trainer. So it doesn't necessarily dictate that even though I'm marketing to a particular niche, that I stay within that niche, because the demand dictates where I go.
All right. I mean, well, there'd be some government facilities or departments, I should say. Yeah. Also in the banking industry, that's something that is very vulnerable, if you will. Also, but now, would you scale down and talk about a light bulb manufacturer who has 50 employees, but somewhere in Hudson County or over there out on the island or up in Westchester, a little small firm like that? But it's still relative, right?
Sure, very, very relative. Those situations are entirely unique to the inability of those smaller firms to be able to understand what the threat is, recognize the threat, deploy the resources to it. So they're not capable enough as the larger companies to dedicate resources to it, so it makes their situation that more vulnerable to the average crook, so to speak, or criminal, or the person who brings a problem to the workplace.
Now, with your protocols that you set, do you implement outside agencies? Like, would you implement the local fire department or police department, or say, listen, their risk manager at the particular plant or bank or any other type of business? Even, you know what, let's even go with a restaurant. There's plenty of employees, yeah, with some of these larger chain restaurants. Would you, would there be third parties besides what you're telling them what to do? Here's what you should be doing. You need to implement that, so that, which it also incurs bringing in local law enforcement or the fire departments, things like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. First, as a disclaimer, let me just say that traditionally, the fire departments and the local police departments and the local emergency responding community, they're all very professional, and they pretty much have all of the insights and the knowledge and awareness to do what I do quite efficiently, if only the local communities would take advantage of those resources. Having said that, it is not uncommon for any one of those organizations to do a request for a proposal for specific expertise to help them either develop a new concept or program, or to enhance an existing concept or program that they want to advance further. So it doesn't put me out of the realm. I've never worked with a bank, I never worked with a fire department or a police agency, but I've had a lot of work with a lot of the business community and the process, whether you're a small business or a large business is to begin with some critical vulnerability assessment. You know, what is it that you want? What is your current situation? And let's ask a bunch of questions.
Yeah. Well, then that would also kind of tie in, with, not kind of, but there'd be some kind of synergy with the computers. So, because I have a guest in a couple of weeks coming on regarding IT disaster preparedness. And I guess you got a partner like that would be kind of a two-prong attack. Do you work with other people like that, too?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, there are two concerns that I often preach about when it comes to people security. One is the violent offender or the potential to be a violent offender, and the other is the workplace avenger. That's the person who is angry. He wants to retaliate, but guess what? He resorts to sabotaging your intranet, your computer systems, and your HVAC systems just to get even, because he may not have the courage to confront you physically, but he does behind the scenes things to jeopardize and compromise your business operations. So
yeah,
IT today is a big target for people who want to retaliate and get even.
Yeah, that's really they can't come out of the light, so they stay in the dark, and
sure.
do their dirty business from there. Let's bring in, like I said before, the Gifford situation, and I know the accused shooter had issues in high school and started showing signs of mental issues, and then going off to college and the same thing there. I know there were some reports out there that they monitored him to a degree, but you know, I mean, you can only go so far. What is with that situation? And it happened when it happened inside a Safeway. Now, Safeway is a huge food chain, and I'm sure their policies are being reviewed as we speak. Since that, what are some of the things, you know, if that was to be the case, what are some of the things that you're seeing, you know, through the news, and maybe possibly you have some inside intel? What are those types of type of things that cross your mind and on that situation and of prevention? Or listen, it can't be prevented, but you can do these types of things.
Sure. Well, the question excites me, Chris, because it runs the gamut in terms of what's running through my mind right now. But I remember, I don't know who exactly said it, but back in the 90s, it was captured that the post office had so many problems that it was called a veritable lightning rod, meaning that at any given point, if you went to work, you may not get home that evening because of so much prevalent violence in the workplace. But it didn't excuse the fact that other companies around the United States were also having a similar problem. And I'll give you one recently out in Valley Stream, the Walmart on Black Friday a couple of years ago, where the employee was stampeded.
Right, correct, right.
Well, you know, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck. They had these events year after year, and they didn't take proper safety security measures to prevent an incident of that type from occurring. And the victim's family sued, but OSHA came back to the company and did their own assessment and found out that they were negligent in providing for adequate security. The problem with people, safety and security, is that they are a microcosm of our society. So whether you're in a Walmart or you're in a supermarket or whether you're in a college, university, or workplace, people bring their social, their economic, and their family problems and their medical problems, wherever they may be, to a workplace, to a college setting, or to an amusement theater, or to a park. That's just what we are. We reflect our society.
Right. And you know what? And everybody's looking to point a finger and say, okay, this wasn't done or that wasn't done. You know, I'm a realist. I'm not an alarmist, but I'm a realist. And so, you know, I sometimes things just happen, and percentages or, you know, things will get through the cracks. But I, you know, with the stampede thing, that's just, you know, to crack the doors open like that. I mean, and this is a, you know, $1 billion business company.
Sure.
What are we talking about? You're just going to, you know, that's really just throw a grenade against the wall. That's, you know, a dam and let the water flow out. It doesn't take that much common sense. It doesn't take an expert such as yourself to say, listen, or even OSHA to come in there and say, listen, you didn't have this, you didn't have that. If it's just common sense to blast open the doors like that, which what you and I talked about before the show, mm-hmm. is the active shooter, as you said. I mean,
sure.
There's just so much you can do.
There's so much you can do, and not to mention the fact that we live in a fear-ridden society where if you say something and it's the wrong thing, you're liable to be sued. if you reveal, discuss, or disclose something, and it comes back to the person who said it, you're liable to be sued. So this whole notion of privacy and the security and the sanctity of information causes, even in that Tucson shooting incident, for people to recognize after the fact that this young man had problems, a reluctance to step up and say, you need help, or let's try and help you, because people are afraid to point a finger, and it might be the wrong finger that gets chopped off. So they see, they hear, but they're afraid to step up and report it. Not to mention, Chris, listen to this one. This is just my analysis of the situation. Not to mention that as kids, our parents push us back out into the street, and they tell us what? Go fight your own battles. Don't come back tattletaling on what happened down the street. You take care of it.
Right.
And then we grow up as kids. We go to high school and college. We have the same problems. We can't come home, so we fight in the schools because mom and dad don't want to hear about our problems.
Right.
But then in the workplace, they say warning signs and risk factors. I want you to tattletale on Felix when you see him acting stupid. Come on. It doesn't work that way.
You have
to have trained observers. You have to select people who are volunteers or select people based upon their propensity to be good, logical people, and train them in how to identify the warning signs and risk factors. And they could be supervisors and managers. You don't want to train an entire workforce because then you have false observations, false readings, and you have a workforce that's perpetually keyed and focused on what? Something, somebody may go postal.
Yeah, right. Felix, we're going to go to a break. We come back. I want to talk about, kind of do like what we say, a little sign-off with contact, but also the methodology of Nader Associates. And we'll go to a break. Stay with us. Disaster Recovery Hour. Come back in a second.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
We're back from a break talking with Felix Nader. He's the founder of Nader Associates. Felix, we talked a little bit. We talked a little bit about liabilities of like the Walmart situation and the Gifford situation. When you left the Postal Service, you had this state of mind. You said, listen, I think I could do this and this, and that's the methodology behind Nader Associates. Why don't you give you some insight to that before we rock and roll and sign off, because the show's rolling quick as quick.
Great.
So go with it.
Good. Yeah, we had a lot of success with the Postal Service in helping postmasters and senior managers cope with the threat of workplace violence. And what we essentially did was we went out and trained every single postmaster, every single supervisor, and every single manager on duties and responsibilities. We supported that training with the ability to conduct limited investigations in assessing and evaluating a potential incident that may come before them reported or observed. And then we showed them through this process how to make a decision in terms of calling in the police or calling in the postal inspectors to assist them further in their assessment and the investigation. And then to manage that throughout the organization, we have what we call the threat assessment and or the crisis management team that reviewed all the incidents to determine whether or not there was a probability of continued escalation or whether we can apply resources to reduce the risk and either move the employee, change the environment, or correct the situation from happening. It was so successful that I said, wow, why not use that methodology, call it violence and addiction, and help small to mid-sized businesses do the same thing, hold people responsible, integrate your limited resources. You don't have to hire a security team. You don't have to hire a consultant. Just bring the consultant in to do initial increased awareness stuff consulting. Put those methodologies in place, and you can be able to, through empowerment, conduct your own threat assessment, your own incident management, conduct your own investigations, and only when you have a question of third-party independent observations, you bring someone like me in to do an independent assessment and investigation, and you can pretty much stand the litmus test on whether or not you are fair or impartial. And so the process really is designed to dedicate resources to it, give credibility to a complaint, establish a reporting system, implement the policy, train to the policy, support the training, and before you know it, there's a culture that's permeated that says, wow, the senior people of this company, they really do care about our people's safety issues.
You know, I was walking in a couple of large stores a couple of days. I had to do some shopping for work-related stuff. I was looking for some supplies and such. And you know, with this economic downturn, And we're still in it. I don't care what anybody says. You know, we're moving up. You know what? I don't know about that. But you know what I found is, you know, people are more aware of their surroundings. The employees of these large retail stores, whether it's the you know, whether it's hardware or clothing, whatever, I found that they're more aware of their surroundings, especially because of the people walking in. And I'm trying to say to myself, you know what, is that because, you know, people are looking to rip them off, or are they trying to retain customers that they need to be better at their job instead of just a you come up, can I help you? No, it's not my department. I don't know anything about that. And so I was trying, because when I saw the website and we talked before, I think about, are people going in that direction of awareness? And you know what, being aware and saying hello to that customer, opposed to not, at least you're understanding, okay, you get a feeling for that customer, he needs help, or you know what, he might be in here to do something in this store. So again, that self-awareness, and that comes from, like you talk about educating some of these managers, not some of these managers, but educating the managers from top to your middle level managers. It's very similar to like the CERT program.
Sure.
You know, I like the CERT program. It's starting to make good traction in over here in Jersey. It's been around for a while, but Felix, I like to pick up somewhere next month, because I have a couple other things, but we can eat up another hour of the show. If you'd like to come back on, that'd be great. It was great meeting you. What are the contact information if any of my listeners wanted to contact you? Or listen, there's also the comments and question page on the website that they can drop a line, and you can view that yourself, and you can reply yourself.
Absolutely, and they can also visit me at my website and Ask Felix. It goes directly to my email, any questions they may have or any concerns they may have. Or they can call my toll-free number at 1-877-825-8101, 1-877-VALUE-101. To the point of you making about the retail community, I take my hat off to them. OSHA spent a lot of time with them since 1998 to really, really protecting their employees from the bad guy who would come in and commit robberies. Well, the retail industry is a lot smarter. They've taken that harsh tone of confrontation, and they've converted it into a soft customer approach. Yes, it's the right thing to do to approach someone.
Mm-hmm.
You put that person on notice that you might have something that's an ulterior motive, but guess what? We're going to preempt it because we now know who you are,
right?
And you're here. So that confrontation is vitally important, and the retail industry is really mature when it comes to dealing with workplace crime and workplace violence.
Right. Yeah. It's quite amazing. I mean, they're really, when you think about it, it's twofold there, because they're taking a look at the customer. Okay, they're let's call it what it is. They're eyeballing them, but yet they're also being pleasant and civil, which
Absolutely.
In turn might retain the customer. Say, you know what, the guy said hello. She or he said hello. It's the small things. I've always been an advocate of. You know, I might like a good meal, but generally, I'm a meat potatoes regular kind of person.
Yeah.
A handshake, a hello, you know, some acknowledgement goes a long way. At least in my world, Felix. It was excellent talking to you. I'm glad you're a guest today and a future guest and part of my preparedness team. I have a lot of guys in different disciplines of preparedness, and this is one that I did not see coming, and I'm glad I saw it and recognized it. And take care, and we'll talk. I'd like to talk next month.
You bet. Thank you, Chris.
Take care.
You bet. Bye-bye now.
So I just want to say thanks again to Felix Nader from Nader Associates. A lot of stuff that I didn't know that he brought to light. And we also, you know, touched on a lot of areas. With that said, another good show, another week down. More snow, more sleet, no rain. A lot of stuff happening on the outside. Take care of yourselves, but don't forget about taking care of yourselves while you're driving. It's super important. Nick Morisi wasn't on this week or last week. The guy is completely slammed. You know, Nick, he's the director of communication at the OEM in the State Police in New Jersey down there in Trenton. It's about being safe behind the wheel. Also, if you can get some form of kit or at least a shovel, that would be a good thing. And that's it. Also, we have this uprising out there in Egypt. That's a disaster. Thought I'd comment on that because it leads me right over into the disaster that's continuing. And hopefully we can get our politicians to make some moves and get the hell out of Afghanistan, including Iraq, even though it's officially not a war over there anymore. But bring home our troops and the females and the males and all the all the civilians that are helping with the backup behind the scenes. And then that's really about it. So enjoy the rest of the weekend and be careful on the roads. And next week's guest is going to be BP, Big Paul Sebring. We have Tim Falconer from Waveplace. Everybody knows Tim. He'll be Skyping in from Haiti. We are still touching on that, but we are moving into other directions. And that's it. So enjoy the rest of the weekend and take care.
Thanks for listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Sunday morning at 11 for the Disaster Recovery Hour right here on AM 970, The Apple.